Happy New Year, everybody. Good evening and welcome to this week's Radio Dalek, the first programme of the new year, 2007, the Chinese Year of the Pig. Streaming live from the Trinity Arts Centre in Bristol and downloadable from radiodalect.net. I'm John Peters Coleman. We've got lots of exciting material coming up in the new year, so stay tuned to Radio Dalek this week and every week. After tonight's local news, we'll be bringing you full entertainment from Radio Dalek. Our intrepid reporter, Anthea Turner, was in Tunisia over Christmas, and we have some features coming up on that. Tony Gosling has done some features for us too, plus our weekly recipe. So if you're fed up with turkey, our recipe this week is for Moroccan chickpea tagine, and that's spelt with a G, which is a spicy and fruity stew of chickpeas or meat or chicken. If you ask for a tagine in Tunisia spelt with a J, you'll be served something totally different. The tagine is like an egg pie with layers of egg and herbs, served with salad and couscous. And you'll need a paper and pencil for that later. Now over to Richard Ayres for the news.
The Lord Mayor of Bristol, Councillor Peter Abrahams, has been in touch with Nelson Mandela's ambassador with a personal invitation to Mr. Mandela to join Bristol's celebrations this year of the 200th anniversary of the abolition of the slave trade. Mr. Abrahams is confident that the 89-year-old former President of South Africa and civil rights campaigner will accept his invitation to play a role in the Abolition 200 series of events. The events will recognise Bristol's role in the slave trade. It is believed that over the course of 40 years, 30 million people were made slaves and that 3 million of them died on the ships which transported them from Africa to America and the Caribbean. Many of the slaves, 450,000 of them, were taken on Bristol ships, and it was this human cargo that made the merchants rich and Bristol one of Britain's major ports. Work is set to start this month on a £200 million redevelopment of the former Courage Brewery in the heart of the city. The development, Finzel's Reach, will include a new 131-foot long footbridge spanning the floating harbour from the brewery to Castle Park. The Mobius Bridge will be constructed in a twisted white steel and will reflect the surroundings by day and will be lit at night. And if one light scheme goes ahead, it may even be lit by a sequence of colour changes. The site of the former brewery will be developed to include 384 flats plus offices and shops. The development has been named after Conrad Finzel, the owner of the counterslip sugar factory, which stood on part of the site in the 19th century. The development will be carried out in phases, finishing in 2010. The developers aim to build a microbrewery in part of the complex, as well as some affordable housing. And as part of the planning consent, the developers will have to fund transport and highways improvements and contribute to local education. Airbus expects Middle East Airlines to spend $76 billion on new planes until 2025 to tap into rising regional demands for air travel. Mr. Ahmed Atsar, head of Middle East Commercial Sales, said, "The number of passengers the airlines are carrying has risen by 8% a year, beating Asian airlines. Airlines in the Persian Gulf are some of the world's top buyers of new aircraft as they try to make the region a hub for tourism and transit flights between Europe, Asia and Africa." Airbus, which employs 6,000 people at Filton, where it designs and partially builds wings for the A380 aeroplane, has confirmed that the 555-seat double-decker model, which is now 2 years behind schedule, is forecast to generate operating losses of £3.2 billion by 2010. The delay in delivery is because production was held up by difficulties installing 300 miles of cable to each plane. Airbus parent, EADS, said it will take years for the A380 to become profitable because of cost overruns and delays, and should break even with the delivery of the 420th A380 aeroplane. It is not yet known whether compensation will be paid to Middle Eastern buyers because of the delays. That was the news from Radio Dialect for Thursday, the 4th of January.
All right, thank you very much, Richard. I'm now going to hand over to our intrepid reporter, Tony Gosling, who's going to interview Lawrence Hu. So, you'll find out about that in 1 second.
Right, Lawrence, It's the 200th anniversary of the abolition of slavery this year, as we just heard in the news, and we've talked about on and off on Dialect for the last year or so. Abolition 200, as it's called, is going to be apparently celebrated in Bristol in some fashion, at least the fact that the Slavery Act was abolished. Lawrence, who's an activist from the other side of the M32 in St Paul's, we're actually on the opposite side here now, but Lawrence, first of all, I just hope it's okay just to describe you as a community activist.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
And maybe you could just give us an idea of what you think of the idea of celebrating 200 years since the abolition of slavery.
Well, first of all, the title of it being named a celebration was the first thing that caused concern to me, because I think it should be a day that should be remembered, but as to celebrate, I wonder who it is to celebrate for.
Isn't the idea that there was obviously a horrendous trade going on, managed from Bristol, and that the campaigning around the country by civil rights activists, white activists here, and obviously by people who have become slaves and didn't want to be slaves in Africa and in the West Indies, that it was seen to be a great weight off their shoulders that this trade was made illegal.
I think really if you check history, 1807 didn't actually change a thing. It was just a date that a piece of legislation was written. You know, 1838 is a much more significant year when the slave trade was actually outlawed then in British colonies. I mean, after 1807, there were slaves still held all through British colonies, and slavery continued exactly the same. And with this date being celebrated, I feel like it's been like brought forward 31 years, because there's still a lot of information that needs to be known about what actually went on.
So the trade was stopped. That's is the ships, but the people were still allowed to own slaves and buy and sell them. Is that what you said?
Yeah, all the way through. And in British colonies, it was up until 1838. When that was actually outlawed, that you weren't allowed to then own slaves. But after 1807, you could be born into slavery. Yeah, you couldn't be traded, but if you were born in 1808 on a colony, you'd still be a slave. So it's like they're bringing it forward, because I think through the internet, a lot more free information is coming forward, because most of the information given is by the enslaver. Yeah, so it's a very one-sided story. It's like 1807, prior to 1807, Haiti, which we're taught is in the Caribbean, they actually had a revolution in Haiti which went on from, I think it was 1791 till 1804. I think they fought off the French originally, because it's originally a French colony, then the French called in the British to help, then they fought off the French and the British. It was the biggest uprising of slaves, and they actually seek their own independence by 1805. Now, this isn't really informed to people widely, and I believe this has a very big reason with that date of 1807 being brought into place. Because besides the abolitionists and the people fighting for slavery who were free, slaves weren't slaves happily. And when I grew up before, I used to think, didn't they fight? You know, sometimes we've got 10,000 slaves and 100 people guarding them or keeping them in control, and I used to think, don't they fight back? Well, go by using the internet and checking history, they did. And it was continued all the way through the slave trade. There was so many uprisings. And then you can see that after that uprising in Haiti, it started to spread through all the other slave colonies like wildfire. So it's in a sense they are giving them a carrot to say, okay, you might be free soon, you know, but don't think what you can do what these people have just done. But the slaves were rebelling at a rate which was alarming.
So what you're saying is that these changes in the law happened with a background to, you know, it being very difficult for the slave owners to manage the slaves.
Yes, that's what it's actually become. It was like, it was hard for them to manage them in the beginning, but as time went on, it got much, much worse. And the amount of deaths of slave owners and on plantations, when plantations were overrun and everybody there was murdered, was getting to like levels that they couldn't believe.
And now, what about this idea of the abolition of slavery? Because this is what's being, you know, this is the way it's being sold. Abolition 200.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sold as, well, it's been sold as 200 years as slavery ended. And it's been very, like, heavily informed that this was the date. It's like, I go back to it wasn't for another 31 years. But I believe, because as the stories are coming out, people, especially of Caribbean, African descent, all around the world, they're like saying, you know, why is Africa in the situation it's in? As you start looking at Africa, you can see that, okay, slavery, they say, ended. Say this date, let's go through history quickly. In America, We had the civil rights movement. So African descendants were free in America, supposedly, but how come they're fighting for their freedoms and their rights in the 60s? So what freedom was given? Now, Britain is paired very well with South Africa. Now, I was alive while apartheid was going on in South Africa. Now, to me, apartheid is slavery. And this is, so what was done to stop this? It just geographically moved, yeah, and different names were given to it, but really it's continued until the present day.
Now, one of the ways a lot of people in Bristol have been talking about this whole anniversary business is through the controversy about the naming of the new massive shopping centre we've got being built in the city centre, Merchants Quarter. What are your views on that, whether it's an appropriate name or not?
Well, I didn't think it was an appropriate name when I see Merchants Quarter, because I believed it was going back to the merchants who made the most of the money through the trade in slavery. And in a sense, it just seemed like a slap in the face when you seen that name. So it came up that, yeah, the merchants made so much money through it that, well, from my views, they actually control, you know, a lot of what's going on in the city. So it wasn't actually a surprise when that name came forward without no consultation.
Well, so yes, the Merchant Venturers. Mm-hmm. I mean, originally they were called the Society of Merchant Adventurers, and then apparently the King thought that they were using monopolistic practices, controlling the port of Bristol, and then decided he would revoke their charter. So they reinvented themselves as the Merchant Venturers. That's where we get them from. What role do you think that they play in Bristol today?
And today I think they still play a very powerful role in Bristol, because you can see that through the slave trade and through this era, this is when Bristol actually like just grew as a city. It's like that. Now it's like it's going for its second growth spurt. You see, all Clifton was built up through the 1700s. All that money came through the trade in slavery. And a lot of Bristol people say, you know, it wasn't like that. But Bristol might not have seen so many of the slaves because the goods were leaving Bristol, you know, which were then being traded, like from the brass factories, metal material going over there, then slaves going over to there, to plantations which are owned by Bristol merchants, yeah. The waterways, the boats were owned by Bristol merchants, and they opened up a lot of these original trade lines, with Bristol being such a prominent port city.
Well, it's interesting that these people are still around.
Yeah. You know, well, they're still here because I think why would you leave if you're living in heaven?
What do you mean? That you think that they've got massive opportunities to make money still?
I think it's like, from if you open up certain channels and you have that type of influence and money and power they had then, because people got to realise that the money made off the slave trade by slave owners, you couldn't make that money today. You know, it was free labour. Free labour on goods that were wanted everywhere. And you had an unlimited amount of free labour. You know, so the money they actually made then is unbelievable. Like when they did stop the slave trade, they got £20 million in compensation then. How much would £20 million in compensation then now be worth today?
Now, isn't it interesting, actually, what you've said reminds me that it was the City Council that's gone through this business a few weeks ago of making some sort of formal apology for slavery, whereas actually the City Council really wasn't anything to do with the original slave trade.
No, I don't think the apology, I don't even know what the apology is about or who it's directed to, you know, because apology doesn't really mean anything. It's the benefactors who should be apologised for the acts that they did. You know, and they're still here, and it's like, so you know, you can't apologise for things that went on XYZ years ago. But we still try people for crimes that were done in, say, like war crimes. And it's only because it's our country that Britain made the laws then that enabled people to enslave other civilised people, yeah, and treat them in a manner. If it was done today, yeah, you'd be in Hague. Yeah, you'd all be on war, everybody be on war crimes. So what is the difference here? Is it because we did the law that said this was legal?
Well, the thing is, say if I was a merchant venturer, I would say, well, hang on a minute, the people who are actually rounding up the slaves over in Africa, mm-hmm. almost all of them were black.
Right. Well, you see, if you check history, to stop reading just purely European history facts and reading facts from other places, it's like, if the trade was so simple, then why were there all these fortresses down the west coast of Africa, where the people had been kidnapped and seized and then held, but against their will? If it was such a ongoing relationship, yeah, it would have been so much smoother. But no, many were seized. If you go actually in the Commonwealth Museum, yeah, in their archive, they've got in there records of villages being seized, children, women, everything, and it's there. And there's no thing of anybody traded. seizure and enlisted like cattle. Yeah, so it's like the information we're given, it's what I keep saying, is actually by the people who have something to hide.
So that, yeah, so I know you're one of these people that thinks that Bristol punches above its weight in world affairs, and it's always had quite a big influence.
I think because of Bristol being such a major port, and it's like in business, if you're in a business and you start setting up links originally, you stay ahead. And I think through the money they've made, I go back to the money that was made through this trade, I think it's unbelievable. People, if you were actually check it, I think a doctor in Birmingham from the Birmingham University, can't remember his name, did it, and it went up to like trillions nearly of money that was made for it, if you put it into relative terms today. So if you've made all that money, you've set up huge trade links globally, and everything was an emerging country. Because remember, America, modern America, didn't exist prior. You know, it was discovered, you know, the country that was there. And all the people there, kind of, they don't exist anymore. You know, so the trade's a lot bigger. It's not just about Africa, you know. The North American Indians, where are they today? But then it's a new territory, so you're setting up new cities. So you can see how people can set up places to gain and keep control if you've got the funds to build the first town hall.
But have you got any evidence that the current merchant venturers have any kind of stake in these kind of big businesses that have been created abroad?
No, not directly. Sitting here...
Well, this is partly speculation. I mean, yeah. How much is known about the merchants and what they do, you know, what they own and what they do now?
I think a lot of it's so guarded. I've been on a few websites where people have had to go in deep to try and retract information. And it's just a fact of, it's fact-based and going backwards and backwards and watching the links and seeing what's probable, because so much information is hidden.
So what would you like to see from the merchant venturers, if anything? Do you think it's relevant that they should be involved in any of this kind of acknowledgement of the 200th anniversary of the end of this particular act? I'll put you on the spot there.
Yeah, that's a tough. On the spot, I don't know. Yeah, you could say, I think they could be involved and be involved and say, you know, they want to apologise and apologise. There's nothing against anybody apologising for anything. But I think what it is where everybody's just blatantly in denial and saying, you know, this didn't go on and we shouldn't have to say anything, you know, because we celebrate to take pride in what our ancestors done. You know, so if your ancestors done something wicked, yeah, you should be able to apologise for what they've done. And I think that's all it is. And I think if they actually said sorry, people would say, you know, I'm sorry for what my ancestors did. It would make people feel a lot smoother about the whole thing and get on with what they're doing.
So some sort of acknowledgement from them.
Hmm.
Yeah. Okay, Lawrence, thanks very much.
Yeah.
Say you'd see me soon, but you're as silent as the moon. You could say let's start again, but you think of other men. And I wonder if I ever knew the more elusive inner you. For the buttons of your mind were difficult to find, and my fingers far too clumsy.
You're not mine anymore, 'cause we take our last walk together along the midnight shore before we say goodbye
The lovable Scouse band, The Scaffold, had Paul McCartney's brother in, and I think Roger McGough. That was Buttons on Your Mind. Our reporter Anthea Page was in Tunisia over Christmas, and this is one of the recordings that she made on her trip in the south of the country, where the Berbers live, near the Sahara Desert. She spoke to the tourist guides at the Kassour, I think I've pronounced that right, K-S-O-U-R, in Ouled Soutane. The Berbers, because they were nomadic, stored their grain and oil in coffers, storerooms built around courtyards, which were called the Kassour, or courtyards joined together called Kassours. They were used as meeting places for the tribes, and there are still a few villages left where this is the traditional way of life.
This place that we're at, the Kassour of Ouled Soutane.
Yeah.
Do you live here?
I live here.
In the village?
Yeah, I live near the village. Okay. In my village, this is my village.
Can you describe, because people in England will have no idea what where we are and what we're looking at. Can you tell them a bit about this place?
Yeah, this is a place, it's like the most old Kassour in the South Tunisia. Old around 800 years ago.
Yeah.
So when the Arab nomad come here,
yeah,
they stay in the desert with sheep, with camel, with everything. But when they built this Kassour just for restoring food and you understand?
Yeah.
And oil and something like this, and there are some people who washing here.
Was it a trading place as well, where people exchange things like cattle and spices? Did they exchange things here? Was it a meeting point for people?
Yeah, in Tataouine, not here.
Oh, not here.
Not here. For the market.
Yeah.
In Tataouine or in Tripoli.
Oh,
Tripoli,
yeah.
Or before Eltran or grandfather go to Libya, because Tripoli is no more near to us than
Tunisia.
Than Tunisia, and our culture is maybe near with Libyan people is maybe same, you know?
Yeah.
Or education or a tradition is more near to Libyan
than here.
Than Tunisia, North Tunisia. Yeah. North Tunisia is not very
to European.
Yeah, like European.
So do the Berbers here, do they all travel around from different countries, like through Algeria, Libya and Tunisia? They're all the same people that travel around, they're nomadic.
Yeah, before, but now they stay here.
Yeah.
Before our grandfather, is like they like to plow raining, plow place where is there is grass, you know?
Yeah.
For sheep, for camel.
Grasslands.
Grasslands. But now they stay here. They're not. They already make small village near the Kassour.
And used to look after the Kassour?
Yeah.
When they were, the nomads, when they weren't here, who looked after the Kassour for them? Did they used to lock it up? or did someone stay here to guard it?
The name of men who looked...
No, I mean, what happened when they were out in the fields? Who looked after the Qasar? Did they have somebody who kept guard here?
No.
No, in the past, did they have guards?
Yeah, they have. They have. They have one person who stay always here.
All right.
Yeah, but now already empty, nobody yeah. inside, nobody who's again. It's yeah. just like, isn't... Somebody tourist come to see and go. There is nobody. He is already restored by government. But now nobody is.
All right.
Nobody.
Well, I'll just describe it for you. We're sitting in the larger of the two courtyards and we're surrounded by these huge granaries. They're like 3-4 stories high and they've just got dark holes where the doors might have been. And little ledges, and they look as if they've been made out of plasticine or clay. They're quite incredible. They've got round roofs, little dome roofs, and steps leading up to the upper chambers. And we're in this vast courtyard, and there's just a few people here. There's the guide who I've just been talking to. There's a young man doing watercolours of it, and a few pots. And we're just having a cup of green tea, which is the local herb tea. And we're on our way back, doing a loop back to Takawin, which is the main garrison town of the south. It's the largest town in the south, and from there it's just this large sandstone desert that we've passed through today.
Oh, well, no matter how much you try to persuade yourself that global warming means your Christmases are going to get sunnier and sunnier, it's not going to be as good as it is in Tunisia, is it? Let's face it. We're going to be going back there later if we have the time for another feature. And thank you to Anthony Page, who recorded that. For those of you who want to travel around Tunisia cheaply and go to the edge of the Sahara, you can book a return flight from one of the package deals to Monastir from Bristol, hire a car at Monastir Airport for around £120 a week, and drive down to Duz in the south, where you can hire the camels for £4 an hour to take you into the desert. She's told me to warn you, if you are not used to riding camels around Bristol, a camel ride can be very uncomfortable after 3 hours. A basic clean hotel will cost around £8 per night for two people, including a simple breakfast of coffee and baguette. At the end of December in Duz every year, they have the camel races, which are well worth going to see. The roads are fairly easy to navigate, and there's not much passing traffic. And the petrol is half the price that it is in England as well, so that's pretty cheap. Sounds a pretty good reason to go, I say, at any time of year. Now some time for some music from Gavin.
I want everybody to get up off your seat and get your arms together and your hands together and give me some of that old soul.
All right, that was Sam and Dave with I Thank You, if you couldn't guess. Tony Gosling found a nice little article in the Christmas Private Eye that he wanted me to read to you. It says, a week after Tony Blair expressed his deep sorrow for Britain's part in the slave trade, Bristol City Council passed a motion regretting, quote, the actions of past Bristol citizens engaged in the slave trade and the consequential crime against humanity experienced by millions of Africans, spelt A-F-R-I-K-A-N-S. Africans with a K. The text of the motion throughout spells Africa and the Africans with a K. Surely even Bristol City Council can't be that illiterate. Indeed not. Quote, it's the preferred spelling among Afro-Caribbean communities and those who work with black and minority ethnic groups, the council's spokesperson tells the Eye. Oh, really? And of course, other notable PC groups such as Rommel's Africa Corps and the former apartheid regime of Sud Africa. There you go, think of that, what you will. That's courtesy of the Christmas edition of Private Eye. We're now going over to a feature from Tony Gosling that he's recorded for us. No, we haven't got that. All right.
Dialect is Bristol's only internet current affairs programme. On Radio Dialect at Trinity Radio.
Radio Dialect.
Alrighty, due to some technical difficulties, we'll skip the Tony Gosling one, and we might come back to that later. We're going to move on to our second feature on Tunisia, courtesy of our Anthea page. This is an interview with Suad Kemhim, who is a poet, and also the tourist guide at Museum of Tozeur, the centre of the date-producing area in Tunisia.
Tozeur, which is the date capital of Tunisia, it's where they produced 1,000 tons of dates, especially at Christmas, and most of it goes to France and the UK. And we've walked down a little side street in the old quarter, and the thing that makes Tozeur so special is a kind of architecture of yellow bricks with relief on it that stand out from the wall in geometric patterns, and the only other place you'll find this is in Iran. Anyway, we're in the museum, and we're in the kitchen area. And there's a very nice lady here called, what's her name?
Suad Kishima.
And she's showing us the kitchen, and they've got some beautiful plates that are green and yellow, very sort of Spanish looking, with date patterns on. And where were these plates made?
It's made with a pottery.
It's a very old Tozeur design, isn't it?
It's made in Djerba in Naples. It's not from the people used it because the people used this.
The clay pots.
In Tozeur. But all this with the color, it comes from Djerba, from Naples. Uh-huh. This color, it's a symbol of the south. Like in Tozeur, the green, it's the oasis, the color. The yellow, it's the desert, the sand, with the decoration, like the dates.
Yeah.
Because in Tozeur, you found the palm trees, and it was a poet, it's called Abul Qasim Shebi. He write a poem for Tozeur, and he say, the most beautiful town to visit is Tozeur, the paradise that's oval green.
Oh, wonderful. And how did the plates... How old are those plates? How old?
These plates? Many time ago.
Oh, many centuries old.
Yes.
So now we've got a grinding stone, and the lady's going to sing a little Arab song for us. She's going to show us how the ladies grind the corn.
To make the flour.
Yeah, to make the flour.
And the women do this. Yeah. The men stay in the coffee, drink tea. And the woman, she put the grain, and after she do this.
She's turning the
wheel. And when she's tired, she sing. Like this. She sing for her love. She can't say my love. She say my uncle. because she don't like when another people understand what she say. She say for her love, when you come to visit me, don't let the step. Because when her father or her brother come back, when he found the step for a man, it's a problem. She say, who come today, it's a problem for him.
All right, thank you to Anthea Page, who had a very nice holiday and made us some lovely articles while she was there. We're now going to hear from The Clash, and this is the Washington Bullets.
Mama, mama, look there. Your children are playing in the street again. Don't you know what happened down there? A youth of 14 got shot down there. The cocaine guns jammed downtown. The killing clowns, the blood money men. Shooting blows. Washington bullets again. As every cell in Chile will tell the cries of the tortured men. Remember Allende and the days before, before the army came. Please remember Victor Jara in the Santiago Stadium, Es Verdad. Those Washington bullets again. And in the Bay of Pigs in 1961, a banner for the Playboy in the Cuban sun. For Castro is the color, is a redder than red. Those Washington bullets want Castro dead. For Castro is the color. Of lead. Sandinista. For the very first time ever, when they had a revolution in Nicaragua, there was no interference from America. Human rights in America. The people fought the leader and our people. With the Washington bullet, what else could we do? If we can find an Afghan rebel that the Moscow bullets missed, ask him what he thinks of voting communist. Ask the Dalai Lama in the hills of Tibet, how many monks did the Chinese get in a war-torn swamp? Stop any mercenary and check the British bullets in his armory.
Well, if you were to spend every single day, 24 hours a day, just listening to The Clash, that would be, well, quite a defensible, enjoyable way to spend your life, I would say. Captain Sensible of the Damned, at a gig I went to, once claimed that he listened to The Clash for 24 hours a day, and somehow it was kind of half believable, actually. It could well be a feasible claim. Now it's time for the quiz. Nobody has guessed who this person is yet, so come on, pull your fingers out and get on with it, because we've been playing it for weeks. Are you ready? Here we go. Who is the woman and what is she talking about? You can text or phone us. And the number is +44 if you're from abroad, or 0 and then 7786952037. And you could win an exclusive Radio Dialect t-shirt.
so exclusive. Even I don't have one, and I'm the presenter. There you go. And that's how exclusive they really are. There's a limited number of these, so we're going to be running this quiz until someone gets the answer. Yeah, to move on. All right.
He told me that his hands closed up when he was at university, and that it was this pivotal time of his in his sexuality as a young man. And it was many years later when I realised that they closed much, much later, and he'd already been married and had children. But he would tell you a story, become very distressed, become very moved by it, and you believed utterly that that had formed him in some way. And I became convinced that this was reflected in his work. The reason why his work was so sexual and had such a strong sexual content was that in some way he'd been sort of castrated as a young man by this condition. In fact, that, you know, didn't exist until much, much later.
Radio on.
Radio on.
Radio on.
Radio on.
Radio on.
Radio
on.
Radio, radio on. On.
Well, who is that lady? And who is she talking about? Who is she talking about? Dale Winton? Desmond Tutu? Stephen Hawking? Could be anyone. Alright, now it's time for a recipe. We're doing these every week, most weeks, for most quite a long while now. This time it's a chickpea tagine, bursting with the flavours of Morocco, and very easy to make. And Moroccan food is probably the least known and appreciated. The country has been subjected to a huge range of influences from the Berbers, the Arabs, the Bedouins, the Spanish and the French. So, here are the ingredients. And I hope by this time you've obviously got your pen and paper ready. So, two large 14-ounce tins of chickpeas, 2 tablespoons of sunflower oil, 1 large onion chopped, 1 garlic clove chopped, 14-ounce can of chopped tomatoes, lots of chopping going on, 1 teaspoon ground cumin, 1.5 cups of vegetable stock, 1/4 preserved lemon, 2 tablespoons of fresh chopped coriander. Here's how to make it. Step 1. In a big pan, fry the onion and garlic until they are golden. Step 2. Stir in the chickpeas, tomatoes, cumin and stock, and simmer uncovered for about 30 to 40 minutes until the chickpeas are soft and most of the liquid has evaporated. Step 3. Then cut the peel of your preserved lemon into very thin strips and stir with the fresh coriander into the mixture. Step 4. Serve immediately with Moroccan bread and broad bean and herb salad. And now it's time for a break with some music.
Radio Dialect is your local internet radio station. Check our website on radiodialect.net.
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 Something kind of nice and homely about those recipes we read out every week. We now have the spiffing gentleman, Jeff Sparks, in the studio. It's going to be a pretty quiet one, I guess, Jeff, seeing as it's just after Christmas and we're all skint.
Yeah, that's right. Starting with tomorrow night and at the Croft in Bristol, it's the monthly presentation by Flight 51. You can expect live sets from Big Joan, You and the Atom Bomb and the Brazen. Doors open at 8 p.m. and entry is £6 on the door. Also tomorrow night, and this time at the Fleece in Firkin in Bristol, Angry Panda will be headlining with support for Vespertine and Countryside. Angry Panda will be celebrating the release of their new EP entitled Fifth Column Gospel on the night, and they will also be giving away copies of the EP. Doors open at 8 p.m. and entry is £5 on the door. On to Song of the Week, and this week I've decided to play a classic track which is sung by a well-known actor. The track is Imagine, which was of course sung by John Lennon, but this version was on the album Voices of Hope by the Sabera Foundation, and the singer was Antonio Banderas, who I must mention had the Calcutta's Sabera Foundation girls singing backing vocals.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no countries. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for. And no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. Say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing. Say I'm a dreamer, I'm not the only one. I hope someday you will join us, and the world will leave us one.
Imagine.
That was Imagine, sung by Antonio Banderas with the Kolkata Sabera Foundation Girls. Now, the website of this foundation does not exist, and you can only find information on them dating back to 2004. But I can briefly tell you that the foundation was established in India by Spanish singer, songwriter, producer Nacho Cano, and it was a non-profit organisation committed to changing the lives of street children and on improving the situation faced by widows and women who have been abandoned by their husbands. Anyway, on to Saturday night, and at Mr. Wolf's in Bristol, the blues folk musician Mark Abbess will be supporting the ska rockers at Skanked. Doors open at 8 p.m, and entry is £3 on the door. Finally, on to Sunday, and at the Reckless Engineer in Bristol, the weekly jazz sessions continue with Dennis Armstrong's Western Jazz Band. The session starts at 1 p.m, and entry is free. That is all from me tonight. Thank you for listening, and have a good weekend. Take care, and good night.
Radio Dialect is your local internet radio station. Check out our website on radiodialect.net.
All right, thank you, Jeff, for that. Well, it's nearly it. That's nearly all for this week. Next week we're going to have another magazine programme, but before all of that, and before we go to the Carpet Megastore, we've got time for to go back to Anthea Page. She was in Tunisia for Christmas, so now over to Tozur in Tunisia.
Little story about the...
Okay, that's a trap. I say it's a trap. It may go with palm trees.
It's a man trap or a woman trap. I said, can I buy one of them? It's a sort of
round shape, isn't it? An oval shape with a straight edge on one, and it's got a bit of netting with a stick.
Grenadine. Pomegranate.
This wood
Oh, from grenadine. Yeah, yes. From a pomegranate tree,
this is from palm trees.
That's from palm tree. Well, what's pomegranate?
I don't know, sorry. So tell us a story about how to trap a man.
I say to catch a man.
Catch a woman.
To catch a woman.
They said the men catch the women.
Yeah, with the jewels. I say like in the shop, on the market, the men do like a trap for women. He say for women is a beautiful gazelle. Comes in my shop. I say it in French, okay?
Yeah.
Belle gazelle, entre dans ma boutique. J'ai des bijoux en argent authentique. Viens voir mes tapis, belle gazelle, je te ferai un prix. Vois mes costumes traditionnels. J'ai envie de parler avec toi. Juste le plaisir de prunelle. C'est gratuit, belle gazelle. Elle tombe amoureuse. Elle appelait lui Gazou après. Le mal de la gazelle, Gazou. Gazou, Gazou, bisou, bisou. Dit aux airs à Kibeli, des douze amidounes, t'as enflammé ma vie. Est-ce le veris de désert, les dunes, les dromadaires, à l'oasis d'Exargilan, tu m'as déclaré ta flamme. Voilà.
That's lovely. And it works every time, does it? If you've got big enough jewels.
So does it work every time if your jewels are très grandes? Oui?
Très grand bijou.
Oui? Oui, c'est ça. Beaucoup de bijoux, comme ça, c'est bon. Ça marche bien, bien, oui. C'est ça.
وعامين ما يكملوش نجيشة يا كذابة قلتي نهار السوق يا كذابة قلتي نهار السوق يا كذابة تعديت على حوشك مسكر بابا
voilà.
So we're in a room, and it's sometimes used as a prayer room. It's got some arches in it painted striped, like the Cordoba in Spain, the Mesquita in Cordoba. And there's a glass case here with...